China feels pain at the pump.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. As of today, many Chinese citizens are paying more for their gasoline and diesel. The government raised the base price of fuel by 18%, the first price hike in 7 months. China provides fuel subsidies to its citizens, who have vaulted to the second largest oil consumers behind the U.S. Reporter Bill Marcus is with us from Shanghai. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tess.
So this is the first price hike since November. Even though world oil prices are up, 45%, what has sparked the change right now?
The supply of diesel has been very tight, and it was projected to get tighter as the summer went on. But the global prices continue to skyrocket, so there was a disincentive to refine and sell diesel. This price hike is going to give Chinese refiners an incentive to increase supply.
How are citizens reacting? What are they saying about how this is going to affect their money situation? Is it comparable in any way to what we're seeing here in the U.S., where people are almost running away from their cars?
In the sense that people in China are just like people in the United States who drive cars and don't like the price hikes, exactly the same.
Yeah.
But in the sense that most of China has never been in a car, let alone owned one, or had to suffer the indignities of filling one up at $4 a gallon, or here it's $3.40 a gallon.
Hmm.
It's much, much different. One fellow who's owned a Buick for 10 years told me that American cars drink a lot of gasoline. He says, I can't afford it anymore. He says he wants to change his car for a Japanese or a European car that doesn't drink as much gas. And a fellow who owns a company said he can raise his prices this year, but not as fast as the gasoline price is going up.
What kind of concerns are there about inflation with this price hike? Because that's been something that the government has been really watching.
Well, this tariff on gasoline is going to go up 18%, but the electricity tariff, which is part of the package, is aimed at the industry, at producers. It's not aimed at residential owners. So the psychological impact is going to be very minimal. And the vulnerable groups like farmers, fishermen, taxi drivers are still going to be subsidized. And the people in the earthquake hit area or Xinjiang, they're not going to be hit with this tariff increase either. So even though there will be a hit passed along possibly in terms of higher food prices, people that have to buy food because the diesel prices of truckers go up a little bit, it's not going to be so hard.
Reporter Bill Marcus joining us from Shanghai. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tess.
And China announced that hike yesterday. The price of oil dropped more than $4 to $132 a barrel. That provided a boost for U.S. stocks. The Dow rose 34 points, 0.3%. The Nasdaq tacked on 32 points, 1.3%. And the S&P gained 5 points, 0.4%. In China today, stocks closed 3% higher after a wild day of trading. Today's high gas prices are forcing some heavy users of fuel to reconsider business as usual, among them school districts. Elisa Roth reports.
It's like having a snow day once a week. When students in rural Caldwell Parish, Louisiana, go back to school in September, they'll only have 4 days of classes. The district only has about 1,700 students, but they're scattered over a wide area, so the school buses drive more than 1,000 miles a day. John Sarton is superintendent of the district.
In figuring the amount of savings, not only from the fuel, but also from water and gas and electricity, we believe we would have a significant savings.
He thinks the district could save more than $100,000 a year. Caldwell joins a handful of other school districts around the country that have made similar calculations. Certain promises quality won't be compromised. The 4 days will be longer and more compact, and the off days will be used for remedial classes and teacher training. Of course, working parents will be left to sort out childcare for the extra day, but the local library is hoping to help out. It's thinking about extending its summer children's program into the fall. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Clarkson Potters, The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat, available now. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
It's been one day since federal prosecutors charged two former hedge fund managers at Bear Stearns with fraud. They're accused of deliberately keeping information from investors, information that could have saved them millions of dollars in the subprime meltdown. Ashley Maltaid has more.
Bear Stearns executives may not be the last to face criminal charges on subprime losses. Scott Myers heads the litigation group at Chicago law firm Levenfeld Perlstein.
There certainly are a number of other hedge funds that are in the mortgage-backed securities space. There are a number of other mortgage originators and loan processors, many of whom have Wall Street connections. So I would not be surprised to see additional prosecutions on Wall Street related to this issue.
But securities lawyer Chris Bebel isn't so sure.
The old saying is, indict in haste, repent at leisure. These are very complex, detailed cases.
Bebel says it could be very tough to convince a jury the Bear fund managers committed fraud. He says if the government does follow up soon with other indictments, it might regret it later. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
By the way, today's New York Times has some details of the Bear Stearns investigation. And guess what got those two hedge fund managers indicted? Yep. Emails. Guess they missed that whole Enron WorldCom Credit Suisse lesson. Continental Airlines and United say they're planning an alliance, not a merger. The news means Continental's flirtation with American Airlines is over. The alliance will allow the two airlines to share routes, passengers, and frequent flyer programs. And more fallout from the subprime mess. Washington Mutual says it'll lay off 1,200 people in its home loan business. In Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.